Good evening, everyone. We're going to start in 1 minute. All right. Good evening, everyone. It's great to be back here at the Shmooze. For those watching on Zoom, for those watching on Facebook, we're going to, as we always try and do, try and make this interactive. This is a very interesting topic, which seems to intrigue and fascinate people. Anytime I've brought up this discussion with anyone that I know. And therefore, if anyone has any questions, feel free to post it in the chat box and we'll discuss it. Or if you're on Facebook, I have that next to me as well. So you can post in the comments a question and we'll try and address it. So tonight's discussion is about dating and marriage in the ultra-Orthodox community. In the more sort of what's called Haredi or ultra-Orthodox community, which broadly includes sort of the Litvish community, the Hasidic community, and then obviously other segments as well, sort of in the ultra-Orthodox community. So as is well known, in the sort of more ultra-Orthodox communities, when we get married, we don't date for very long. For a couple of weeks, a few weeks, the boy meets the girl, they barely know each other. And they get engaged, and like 2 months later, they're married. And the expectation is, as when one gets married, is that you try and stay married for life. That's the person you're going to settle down with and build a life, have children with, and spend the rest of your life together, in effect. Which to some people, when you say such a thing, it sounds absolutely bizarre. So we want to try and discuss tonight the approach, the system, how it works, the pros, the cons, if there are, and sort of various parts to it. Once again, if anyone has any questions or comments, as long as it's respectful, please, because obviously, like all of these things, we never come here to bash or speak negatively about any community, even if we do bring up issues, but we'll try to do it in a very respectful way. So please, if it's respectful, please post a comment and a question and we'll try and address it. So let's begin, first of all, with just describing the system. So Tati, if you want to just spend a few minutes, you've been married for quite a number of years. I've been married for 7.5 years. You've been married for a little bit longer than that. If you can just describe the process, what exactly, for those who are not familiar, just sort of the technicalities before we get to the philosophy behind it and how sort of the advantages of it. If you can just describe the process, how did it work when you went out? How does it work sort of in the mainstream ultra-Orthodox communities?
Okay, good evening, everyone. Great to be here. Interesting topic. The good thing is, I think the way I did it is very similar to the way you did it, and the system continues. So I think it's a good start. Let's just understand what we're talking about. First of all, I think very cleverly you put in the advertisement for tonight's topic, arranged marriages. A little bit of false advertising, because actually it's not really arranged marriages. People always confuse arranged marriages is the imagery where boy doesn't even meet the girl and vice versa, and kind of parents all do it, and then they kind of just say this is who you're marrying and that's it. It's not quite the way the system works. Now I must say, again, like you say, we're not bashing any system on either side of the spectrum. But there is a system amongst some very ultra-Hasidic circles till today, what they call the Bashar system. The Bashar system is that all the research has done, all the research has been done by the parents in a very, very extensive way. They kind of really think that it's going to fit, but then they set up a one-time meeting. Now, even that is not arranged in the sense where it's forced. It's not forced. Both boy and girl have a choice to say this really didn't seem like a really good idea at all. However, I mean, normally it doesn't happen, or you know, they kind of trust their parents. And I'm not bashing that system at all, because the truth is that it works. It works to a large extent. It's got its problems. And then so I know very, very beautiful marriages that are an outcome of that system. But that's not the system we're talking about tonight. The system we're talking about tonight is more what happens in the mainstream ultra-Orthodox community, like you said before, the Litvish, Chabad, some Hasidic circles and so forth. And that is the following. Parents have the responsibility initially to marry off their children, which begins, if I remember correctly, you'll tell me if I did as well, but it begins with a conversation between the parents and children, a number of conversations about what they're looking for, what they really want. And if it's done well, parents don't go find someone or don't look into someone that fits what they would like to happen, but they fit what's good for their children. They use their experience, their maturity, their life experience, hopefully, to approach either a shatchin or to do their own research or whatever the case is. And then they come up with ideas, and they find someone that perhaps looks really good. They do extensive research to the best of their ability. When I say extensive research, I don't mean a full-fledged like business interview and due process. I think I'm talking about understanding the basics, understanding the background to the person, the background to the family, if it's going to fit, if it's a good fit for their child, their son, their daughter. And then when all that is done on both sides, they normally get a shatchin. A shatchin could be either an official shatchin, someone does this for a living, or just a family member or a friend to suggest it. When they suggest it, then the two people meet. If they want to, they keep going. Normally, initially, the communication goes to the shatchin. After a while, they take over between themselves. And they meet for a number of times until they think it's a good idea, until they feel comfortable, until they're ready to. That can be anywhere between 4 or 5, 6 times, or 12 times. But it's normally in that range kind of thing over a number of weeks. And then when they feel ready, they feel it's a good idea, he proposes and they finalize it and they get engaged. So I haven't discussed the merits of the system. You asked me just to discuss what the system is. Yeah. That's basically how it works.
So let's get a little bit more in detail. And as I see a few new people coming on, again, if you have any questions or comments, as long as it's respectful, please post on Facebook or on Zoom. Let's go a little bit deeper into the technicalities, but move a little bit more into the values of the system. So what would they do? I mean, I'm asking this if I didn't go through it. So let me just put this out there. I'm married. I've been married for 7.5 years. We went through the same process. We went out for approximately 3 weeks. And then we got married 3 months later. So that's my story. But maybe you can just describe, people are not familiar with this, what would they do? You know, if they go out 7 times, let's say on average, each one is 4 or 5 hours long each date. What do they do there? What do they discuss? What's the sort of the correct way of going about that? How do you, another way of wording that question is, how can you possibly make a decision you're going to spend your life together with another person after knowing them for the total duration of 30 hours or 40 hours or whatever it is? It sounds absolutely crazy. For someone who hasn't gone through it, based on what are you making that decision exactly? Is it based on attraction? Is it based on shared values? What have they been doing for those 2, 3, 4 weeks that they were going out, that they were dating?
Okay, so I want to just clarify. I think you've actually asked 2 questions there, which are connected. And I think that's important to understand. And I think we need to take a few minutes for this question, because this is really the, I'm sure you can ask lots of detailed questions, but I think this is the core of what understanding how the system works. Now, there are beautiful marriages in any system, and there are beautiful marriages in the secular world, and people that are together for many years, whatever the case is, right? But the reality is as follows. The reality is that relationships, and this is the In other words, before I get to what they actually do on these dates, let's talk about a very foundational concept in marriage or in your relationship generally, right? People often ask me, and I've been asked this from all sorts of systems. I've been asked this of people that go out for years. I find it hard to commit. How do I know if he's the right one? How do I know if she's the right one? And my answer to that is, you actually are never going to 100% know, because the question is wrong. I think the question is, it's not completely wrong, obviously, but the question is more is, how do you know if I'm the right one? Meaning, am I ready for a relationship? I say that because any relationship needs work. Doesn't matter how much you've been together. Doesn't matter how much you think you know the person. Until you've committed and until you live together as a married couple, or even more, until you have children. Because you would know, and I would know, and people who got married would know, that children brings a whole nother layer of potential stress or potential happiness, both together, to a marriage, right? Any marriage needs work. Any marriage is based on fundamentals. The fundamental is respect. The fundamental is love. The fundamental is communication. And of course, this is not a lecture on communication, not a schmooze about communication or relationships. So therefore, we're not gonna go there. But these are the foundations. Now, if people get married and they are ready to put in the work, and they understand the necessity of putting in that work, beautiful work, enjoyable work, but they understand the selflessness that's required in a relationship, the ability to put one's ego aside, the ability to communicate love, the ability to invest in love, to build love, to really exercise respect, to understand the individuality, to care for someone, to have empathy, and so on and so forth, then it doesn't matter how long you've known each other, as long as you know that the foundations are there. Now, meaning the foundations of compatibility are there, which then leads into, therefore, what do they do on seven dates? Right. So a number of things that happen, and I divide them into two, three things. The first thing is chemistry. Chemistry doesn't mean romance. Chemistry doesn't mean madly in love, but chemistry does mean attraction. Now, that's a fact. People can be, on paper, can be amazing matches, which is often exactly why people need to go out beyond the research of their parents, right? It could actually make sense. It's happened to some of my children where It didn't happen the first time, didn't happen the first girl, the first boy. And not because it didn't make sense. It made perfect sense. It just doesn't fit. So conversation has to flow. Attraction has to be there. The excitement, the looking forward to the next date has to be there. All those things have to be there. So basic chemistry has to be there. The second is communication. Communication, is the communication? Are you comfortable talking to the person? Does the conversation flow? And so on and so forth, which can be established in all kinds of conversations. It can be nonsense conversations even, right? Those are the things. So chemistry, communication. And then the third one is very, very important. And I'm just going to give you a little bit of introduction, because the third one is the following. Differences between people don't matter that much, because relationships are about differences. That's what relationships are. It's about broadening and expanding one's own personality to respect and explore and connect to the personality of another. But what does help, and is, I believe, quite important, is shared values. Not how exactly those values are going to be implemented, but shared values. And therefore, as you would know, part of the discussion, maybe not the first time, but definitely part of the process involves, I see you smiling there at your wife. So shared values is important. And therefore, although shared values is explored a bit in the research phase, but it certainly needs to be thrashed out a little bit. And therefore, people need to have discussions, deeper discussions. And that's often what happens, about what are the values, what type of home you want, what are our belief systems, What kind of family do we want to have, and so on and so forth, right? So those three things, when those three things are established and people really, really think it's a good fit, and there is chemistry, and there is looking forward, and there is excitement, and there's shared values, and there's good communication, and it seems like there's mutual respect, then it can go ahead if you're ready. If you're not ready, if a person is not ripe for a relationship, if a person doesn't want to put in the work that any relationship needs, if the person is not a respectful person, you go out for 3 years and the relationship still won't last. Because as we know, relationship breakdown today is very, very strong. Unfortunately, I think the research is something like 50% or something, or 40% of relationships fall apart, right? Now, I don't think everyone's just a bad judge of character, but often, not always, something are hidden things that we don't know and come out later and so on and so forth. But often, even people know each other very, very well. When they have to live together in a regular routine and the excitement is over, the honeymoon phase is over, they've got to really exercise respect, relationship, communication, and so on and so forth. And when that's not there, often it leads, especially when people are more egocentric, it leads to relationship breakdown. And it doesn't make a difference how long you know the person for.
Yeah, I just want to add one point to that about the values idea. I think also what's important for people to realize, for those people listening, is that in the sort of more we're using labels here. And as we said at the beginning, not, God forbid, put down any other people or system. We're just discussing this system. So in the more ultra-Orthodox world, the world that we're part of, we don't date for fun. There's no such thing. We don't, you know, when I was in my teenage years, we didn't go out with girls. Girls didn't go out with boys. It just wasn't a thing. We only date for one reason, and that is to get married. So in other words, when we sit down on the first date, the conversation very quickly goes to what type of home do you want? How are you going to bring up your children? It's mainly values based. Obviously, you want to see if you can discuss, you know, share jokes together and laugh together also, but it's very, very value centered because that is the only reason why you're doing this. You're not doing this to do this for the next 3 years and have fun together. You're doing this so you can get married, and that's why you want to work that out as quickly as possible. That would be sort of the only reason why we're sitting down together. Does that make sense? Is that?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, I think it's much more focused. Just to clarify, I don't think you mean that every conversation is serious, because
no,
part, like you said, part of the process is you want to see if you can just schmooze with the person and find just common things to talk about and have some of the interests and just have fun together too. But yes, but the process is very much, you don't just go out for the sake of going out. It is definitely when that happens after the research and after the, you know, and after the thing, you do go out with a focus, and the focus is doesn't turn out, and that's fine. But the focus is both boy and girl know the first time they date, there's a potential shidduch. It's a potential marriage.
Yeah.
Not committed, no pressure. And I think it's important to mention, it's a system without pressure. That doesn't mean sometimes when a parent sees an undecided child who's really, really happy, it just seems has cold feet because they don't want to, just hard to commit and hard to take the jump, that sometimes a little bit of subtle nudging is in order. I've done it myself, worked out very well with some of my kids. But nevertheless, having said that, it's very important within the system. And sometimes parents do make mistakes. Part of the system does demand that parents back off and they don't pressure, because it is a decision, a choice that the boy and the girl need to make themselves.
I think that's another point, sort of a general point before we go further, to point out here, that we will discuss some specific issues that may have come up in recent sort of times in the system. But obviously, we're talking about the ideal here. Like in any system, there are people who abuse the system and do it wrongly. We're talking about doing it the right way. So that's what we're trying to sort of explore, how can we do this the right way. Talking of which, you know, when you go out with someone for you know, 6, 7, 8 times, you and you're very values focused, you can generally work out what the person's value is on a general sense. Obviously, you don't know, you know, every specific scenario that will come up in life, what their opinion will be, but you know their values, you know their focus in life, what they consider important. But there are some things that people can hide. For example, you know, if you go out with somebody, you don't live together, you don't have much to do with each other outside of those times where you're going out. How do you know that person is not abusive? How do you know that person is not a terrible person who will abuse you for the rest of your life? How does this system allow you to sort of filter that out? And does the worldly system, when I mean the worldly system, does what 99.9% of the population does that work better in that area? Do they have more of a chance of figuring out if there's a serious issue? Because as you said, you know, relationships need work. If you have two people committed to working on it, it will work out. But what happens if it's not like that? What happens if you're marrying someone who doesn't, who's not committed to making it work out, and who's actually a terrible person?
That's a great question. I think, first of all, there's two answers there. First of all, in any system, you don't always know. I mean, those who understand that the process of abusive relationships will know that often the abuser will hide and will sweep someone off their feet until they have to commit, until the moment of commitment, whatever that means, whether the commitment is moving in together or getting married, whatever the case is, right? So often it can be for a very, very long period of time because it's sometimes very controlled and very calculated. So you don't know any system. Having said that, I think it's crucial for guidance to be given to younger people. When I say young people, not only younger people in going out and dating, but young people even before throughout high school and adolescence and so on, to know how to spot someone and to know the warning signs. And those warning signs are very important, and to understand the danger of those warning signs, because often what people do is that they go out and get in any system and they like what they see and they're attracted and there's a bit of romance and so on and so forth, and they become blind to any potential warning signs, and that's very dangerous. I'll tell you just one thing that I've shared.
Let me say, John, if I was saying, do you think that's happening? Is there that education in our sort of in the ultra-Orthodox system?
In the school system, probably not enough, but I think it's definitely upon parents to do that. It's very, very important, right?
Yeah.
One of the ways I've done that with, I don't know if I did it with you, but I don't need to anyways, one of the things I've said to at least a lot of my children is the following. When you go out, you need to look for two things, right? Because often the feedback you get from younger people when they go out is, yes, the conversation was great. The time passed. We hardly knew the time was going. It's fantastic, right? But then when you probe a little bit deeper, you find that, hold on a second, it was a one-way conversation, right? A one-way conversation is already a warning sign. In other words, the question I always ask my children, I say, when you go out, And when I've debriefed, because that's part of the system, right? You go out, you come there, you call your parents, and we talk it through, right? So the question I always ask is, the conversation was really great, but were you, first of all, do you think it's a person you can respect? In other words, number one, right? Were you really interested in what she or he has to say? And vice versa, do you feel that they were really interested in what you have to say? Meaning they were respectful and they really were interested in you, right? Because that's a sign of someone who's less egocentric. That's a sign of someone who's... Now, is it foolproof? Of course not. You have to have a bit of faith in any relationship. Anything in life is about risk-taking, right? The second thing is to be aware is... And also, I mean, you try to build this into a bit of the research before as much as you possibly can. But also, some warning signs are how do they treat other people, right? You went to a hotel, you had a date. I'm mentioning hotel because that's like a sort of a traditional... lobbies of a hotel, a traditional places to go to for these kind of systems, right?
And typically...
What's that?
Yeah, we can order a drink.
Yeah, and you order a drink. How does he or she treat the waiter or the waitress? How do they if you took a taxi somewhere? How do they treat the taxi? How do they treat people in general? And that's those two things. I think the others also. I think those are some of the two examples of looking for warning signs. And I think it does need to be not over obsessive because you can panic and you can have paranoia about anything. But, you have to, there's a bit of risk taking and everything. But there is this concept of looking out for some warning signs. And those sometimes can become pretty obvious pretty quickly.
Yeah. And like you said, it's not foolproof. It obviously happens in every circle, including the ultra-Orthodox circles, where there are abusive marriages. And that's
absolutely.
And we can't hide from that.
And then part of education, which is a separate discussion, is what do you do about it? And you have to stand up to it and empowering people to stand up to abuse and so on and so forth. That's another discussion.
Correct. Just picking up from one thing that you said and sort of moving on a little bit, this is going to be a broad question. We'll ask a few questions together here and we can discuss it. So you mentioned that there's no, and again, obviously, we're saying there's no, everyone does it their own way uniquely, but it's sort of more of a general sense. When you have been with someone for, whatever it is, 30, 40 hours, there's not going to be this major feeling of, being madly in love or tremendous romance going on. And what's important to understand also, people, just to sort of give everyone sort of a more picture of this, it's not like in the more sort of very religious circles, it's not like in between dates, there's like a lot of correspondence going on. It's sort of, you just go out for those few hours, you focus during the 4 hours, and then you debrief with your parents and then sort of you work it out. And do you want to continue this? You don't want to continue this? And you continue it. It's relatively speaking, quite formal. And there's no tremendous, you can't say there's some major, feelings of love and romance and all this type of stuff. Is that a problem? Why do you think that's a good thing? Because that's sort of inevitable if you follow the system. And if that's the case, what's the wedding? Because a wedding usually people look at as like a celebration of their love and their feelings for each other. I mean, we're talking about two people for all practical purposes who barely know each other, right? Who literally just know each other's values, feel attracted to each other somewhat, but there's no major fireworks, lightning bolt coming down from the sky. So what's the happiness by the wedding? Is a wedding a happy thing? What exactly are you celebrating? Maybe you can sort of shed some light on it.
So you're asking two opposite questions there, actually three questions. So let me answer the first part of the question in two opposite ways, okay? And this is something that you haven't gone through yet. What I mean to say is you haven't married or children yet, right? So you've been through the system yourself, but I'll tell you something from the perspective of a parent, okay? So first of all, part one is there's actually a great advantage in not being fully fired up with romance, because there's an advantage, although a relationship, the glue of a relationship and the flourishing of a relationship happens much more from the heart than from the head, right? But it's also a little bit good to go and get married a bit from the head, not only from the heart, because then you can make also judgments. You can, in other words, you can actually a little bit judge the values and the character of the person without being blinded by full-on powerful romance and love and so on and so forth, where you're completely blinded by some of the stuff you should be noticing, right? So there's a great advantage to that. The flip side of that is, and this is the part of a parent that I'll tell you, right? One of the challenges we had, your mother and myself, is that when our children dated, it was normally in New York or in the States, put it that way, right? And therefore, it was hard for us because we wanted to see. It was pre-Zoom days, by the way. I don't even know if Zoom existed in those days, right? but it was pre. So it was hard because it was always good to be able to see the person. But without seeing the person, I can tell you that we, as parents, were able very quickly to tell by the first couple of sentences you said after you came back from the date, or you and your siblings, right? There's something, doesn't always work like that, but there's something very special. Like, we had other, not you, but some of your siblings went out a number of times. It didn't happen the first time. It happened a number of tries with different people, I'm saying, right? And there were some times where, yeah, you went out, you know, they went out once or they went out a second time or a third time, but we kind of knew after the first time, don't think this is going to work. It sometimes happens where it takes a couple of times to work, but there's not that click. And you could tell even by, I mean, just to make sure we'd get some of your aunts or uncles to have, just you know, we'd sort of ask them what you look like and, well, what do they see on you and so on and so forth, that it was very informative. But really, even without that, as a parent, you can tell there's a click and there's excitement. There's just, things just click sometimes, right? I mean, if you like, it doesn't always work out. Sometimes the complications and so on and after we work through, and that's true. And sometimes that turns out very beautiful anyway. But often it's just like, yeah, there's that click there. And then it doesn't work out because one of the parties decide, no, it's not for them. The values aren't, whatever the case is. But there's a certain spark. It's not full on romance. It's not full on love. Definitely not. But there's a certain spark you can tell right away. There's a chemistry which comes out in just the way you talk afterwards, just right. And the parents pick that up, and it's very, very telling. And then the question is, what is the wedding? So maybe the wedding is a bit different in these circles. The wedding is a tremendous simcha because it is not easy to find someone who you think is going to be a good fit. It's a long process. There's that research. There's a going out. There's the mutual, you know, sometimes boy and girl go out. Boy is really excited. After three or four times, girl says, no, it's not for me, or vice versa. And that's heartbreaking sometimes because the one person was very, very excited. So a lot has to happen to get to the chuppah, right? And we get to the chuppah, you have faith and you have a munah and you know, you've heard such wonderful things and you've got to meet the person and so on and so forth. And everything looks really, really good. And you celebrate the amazing potential of this union. And you celebrate the reaching this moment that this is going to, with the work of both of them, please God, to go into a beautiful and blossom into a beautiful relationship, a beautiful family, right? But you're right. It's very, very different. In these circles, in the ultra-Orthodox circles, if any groom or bride gets up in the speech of the wedding and says things like, you're my best friend, I love you, you don't normally hear that in those weddings. And if you do, they're lying because they hardly know the person, right? And they're not lying. They believe they will love the person. They're very excited at the prospect of spending the rest of life with this person. They're very excited in building this, and they think it's absolutely going to work, and they have full confidence because they've reached that point, they made that firm decision. But to say, you know, you're the best thing in my life. You're my best friend. I love you with the core of my heart. That's nonsense. That comes later, right? Just to share a little Torah thought on that, right? There's the famous verse where Rivka married Yitzchak, right? And she came, and then that was a pretty arranged marriage. And then Yitzchak, it says, he brought her to the tent of his mother Sarah, and he married her, Vayehaver, and he loved her. And he loved her comes afterwards, because the full-blown love has to develop. You grow together, the love for each other grows together with time. And that's what you celebrate. You celebrate I once went to a wedding of a couple that were together for ages, and someone said in the speeches, today we celebrate the culmination of our relationship. But I thought to myself, how sad. I thought that happens like when you die, but right, it's not you celebrate the beginning, the planting it, the foundations of the relationship.
And kind of just sort of to pick up on that, and maybe just prompt you to explain something a little bit more. Maybe let's get to the essence of things for a moment. Why is that important? In other words, why is it important that the real love and passion and connection and relationship starts after marriage? Why can't you have a relationship before marriage? Why is it necessary to do it this way? And in essence, I think what I'm really asking is, why is marriage important at all? In other words, why can't you just have a relationship without marriage? Why is the wedding an important event at all? Why can't you just live together and have a life together? Why is it a contract? Is it a commitment? Is it some sort of spiritual idea?
All of the above. No, I think this is the crux of the issue, right? That in Judaism, particularly, marriage is something that happens on many levels. It is extremely physical. It's the most physical thing that exists. The intimacy, the sexuality, the love, everything that comes together with it is extremely important, and extremely important that it happens, and it happens well, and it happens deeply on a very, very, very physical level. But it mirrors and it reflects and it represents a very, very deep spiritual thing that is happening. The feminine energy with the masculine energy coming together, it's analogous and symbolic of God and the Jewish people. It comes, you know, the famous concept in Hebrew, Ish and Isha, is man and woman, and they spelt the same with the aleph and the shin. The only difference is that there's the yud with the ish and the hay with the isha, which together the yud and hay makes up God's name, right? So therefore you're bringing God into the whole thing and laying the foundation. And part of that is that the physical part of the marriage helps the spiritual part, the spiritual part helps the physical part. And therefore, for to really succeed, the belief is that you need to lay the foundations in a very deeply spiritual way, which includes spirituality, it includes blessing, it includes commitment. And a commitment means exclusive commitment, a real firm spiritual binding commitment to each other, which happens through the kiddushin, the giving of the ring, where they proclaim that it's an exclusive relationship to the exclusion of other things, which is part of the reason why the relationships, random relationships before marriage is discouraged. Mingling between boys and girls is discouraged because it's about the newness, it's about the sanctity, it's about the uniqueness of the relationship, intimacy, love, all these things, which comes in the context of a very deep physical commitment, but spiritual commitment all at the same time. And that's all created by the concept of marriage, which goes back to your previous question. That's part of what the joy is at the wedding. The wedding is the celebration of that commitment. And in fact, we are taught Kabbalistically that it's not just that you're happy about the commitment, but in fact, the happiness at the marriage draws down. This is not for this discussion, but the happiness at the marriage, the dancing and everything that happens at the wedding, in fact, draws down blessing and helps and supports the couple create that flourishing relationship, hopefully to come later.
Yeah. Which I guess another way of saying that would be that the relationship is you have a relationship to the person that you marry. You don't marry someone who you had a relationship with. In other words, the relationship is based on the marriage. The marriage is the foundation of the whole relationship. And I think also this would also explain another thing for those who have been to these type of weddings. I know from my own wedding, it's very different it's very happy, extremely happy. I mean, the dancing by the wedding, I remember by our wedding was out of this world, but the chuppah especially is extremely serious. There's no smiling, there's no laughing. It's sort of very, very intense, and extremely, extremely focused. And even the dancing is done in the sort of, at least ideally, in a very holy way, in a very focused way, in sort of holiness and the spirituality involved in it. and the sort of, yes, it's extremely focused. I want to bring up a more of a perhaps more sensitive issue, but I think it's on a lot of people's minds when it comes to these type of marriages, and I think it's an important thing to discuss. You mentioned that that marriage is a very physical experience, and the physical aspect of marriage is very, very important. So I want to ask you two questions about that in terms of this system. First of all, if you can clarify, just for everyone who's listening, when they get married, the husband, the boy and girl, the husband and wife, have they touched each other at all before the marriage? Is there any physical contact at all before the wedding? And if not, maybe you can shed some light. How does that transition work from barely knowing each other, never having touched each other, to going to the ultimate intimate physical experience? That could be quite a transition. And especially, just to add to the question, and maybe this is more of a broader question beyond the physical, but it includes the physical as well, and that is, if you're talking about a boy and a girl who really never had a relationship with another boy and girl in their life besides for their parents and their siblings, that's a totally different type of relationship, obviously. How do you expect them to know how to have that relationship? Obviously, men and women are different. Men have to relate to women one way, women have to relate to men a different way. They have different needs, different sort of, and you have to understand each other. You have to understand the other person's world. How do you know how to do that if you never experienced a relationship before with the opposite gender?
Yeah. So I think, first of all, again, another great question. And I think the question needs to be elaborated on because it's always on people's minds when we talk about this kind of a system. So first of all, I think it's important to be honest. It's not easy. But then there are aspects of it that aren't easy in any system. Whenever people start top relationships, especially unnavigated and not focused and without a system, without guidance, often really, really bad things happen. I mean, just to, again, I think we've said this 1,000 times, but it's important to think that the subject of this discussion is not to put down any other system, just to explain the system. But for the purpose of explaining the system, you can see the problems that exist in the conventional secular system, where now there needs to be such discussion about consent and about respect, and it's really unfortunate. Now, not to say that disrespect and abuse doesn't happen in the Orthodox community. Of course it does. No system is perfect, and again, to emphasize that there are often problems and problems need to be dealt with, and no community or no system is immune from problems. But if it's done correctly, hopefully, and the foundations have been laid correctly, so first of all, I think there's a couple of things to understand. As I said, it isn't easy. Sometimes it's awkward and sometimes it's hard. When you've never even touched a boy or a girl before, it is difficult to suddenly become intimate and suddenly have a very, very strong relationship. So first of all, we, in our system, as you know, there's a lot of guidance. There are people designated to talk to boy and girl, to describe what's going to happen, to prepare them, to give them guidance of what's supposed to happen, and also to open the door for them to understand that afterwards, if there's any problems, they should, and there are problems, right? They should be feel free to discuss it. They have to have either a parent or a mentor or a rabbi or if necessary, when the time comes, a therapist, whatever the case is, right? But it doesn't happen anymore. I think in any system we need that. But that reassurance is given, and also reassurance is given that sometimes there are issues and it takes time, right? And then I think part of the beauty of the system is that you grow together with communication, with communicating needs to each other. Yes, it starts off slow, it starts off awkward, and you grow together and you talk about it and you grow very, very deep together. And sometimes the very knowledge that you're doing this together, and you, again, not forget it's a mutual thing. You're both doing this together for the first time. Hopefully for the first time, right? But that knowledge itself is a very beautiful thing. That you actually, it's new, it's unique, and it's unique to each other. And it's exclusive. In other words, it's just these two people, and they're growing together. And sometimes it takes quicker. Sometimes it takes longer. Part of the, and again, it's not for this discussion. There's so many things that come out of the discussion. It's amazing. But part of the system is enhanced by the laws of family purity, which have its own challenges, but nevertheless does create structures and timing and slows down the process a little bit. And that makes it easier for that. Not that it's an easy thing, it's easy mitzvah to keep necessarily, but it does help along this process as well. And people grow together and should grow together. And it's really important. And I think it's important to understand that people understand that particularly in the religious system, particularly in the concept of a healthy, intimate life and a good intimate life and a deep intimate life, purely on a physical level, is extremely important and considered extremely holy and extremely sacred. It just takes time to get there, a little bit of time to get there to be able to be very, very comfortable with each other on that level.
Do you think, just to sort of, do you think that more guidance is necessary than what's given? Like, do you think there's room for improvement in this area? Do you think we're doing a good job? Just from your experience of guiding people.
Look, I think if I look back, when I got married and when you guys got married, I think the system has improved. I think the communities have grown, and I think some of the problems have been more highlighted, where perhaps in the olden times people used to sweep things under the carpet generally and just not, you know, it was sometimes made more difficult. Not that they never got there, but it was just more difficult, much more difficult. And I think with time, when communities are more organized and more structured, they put in better guidance systems and better lessons and better mentors and more qualified mentors and so on and so forth to help guide the people navigate through this sort of initial challenges of becoming close and intimate with someone who you didn't know before, you didn't have that relationship with before. So I think we're getting better. Is there room for more improvement? I'm sure there is. There's that balance, because part of the whole concept of tzniut and modesty is that it's not explored to great depth before marriage, but nevertheless, it is done much better and probably can be improved and will continue to be improved probably as we go along.
Great. You mentioned before from a parent's perspective, but I want to ask you just from a slightly different angle. Having married off, I'm sure you married off five already, right?
Five children and one to go.
What's it like, just from your experience, what's it like marrying off a child? Because, you know, I think one of the, you know, I was 22 when I got married. You know, what do you know when you're 22, right? You're 22, you don't necessarily, you know, understand what life is and then what the risk you're taking or what it really entails. As someone who has been married for many years, with their children, has experienced all the problems and issues of life, watching your child take that step to somebody who, number one, your child barely knows, but also you barely know, right? I mean, you met your future son-in-law and daughter-in-law, you know, four times before they got married, you know, once by the engagement party, once when you bought them a present, you know, you barely know them. You've done your research, but you don't really know them. What's the feeling like? Does that need a lot of faith? Does that need a lot of prayer? Like, what, describe to me the
So first of all, it varies from child to child. Like, sometimes you actually do know the person better, right? Like, yeah, in the case of your wife, for example, we kind of knew her before through some of our other children. But you're right. So I think there's a combination, there's a balance between two things. I mean, I have never been happier. Baruch Hashem, thank God, did not get less for any of the weddings. I mean, obviously the first one was amazing, but it didn't get less for any of them. I think you remember by your wedding, I was quite, maybe I wanted too many l'chaims even. But it's the most amazing, amazing feeling to walk a child down the chuppah, and it's an amazing feeling to participate in the wedding. Having said that, it has both emotions together. So, I mean, just to describe to people, the day of the chuppah for me of my children was perhaps almost as serious as the day of my own chuppah. And maybe more so, because you understand more about life and you understand more about, you know, the risks of life and, you know, particularly my position where I talk to a lot of people and know kind of what could go, God forbid, wrong. But I mean, I'll tell you an interesting thing. There's a custom which some have, and I personally adopted this custom, except for one when I wasn't feeling well. I had a bit of a flu, so I was careful. That just like the chatan and the kala, the bride and the groom fast the day of the wedding, some have a custom, even the parents fast. And I did that. I fasted on most of them, and I davened a special mincha, and I said lots of prayers that day, lots of tehillim, gave lots of charity, relatively speaking. Why? Because the day of the wedding is a very special, it's a time to really build up our faith and ask God and beseech and really beg God to bless this union. But also, you know, you've done your research, you see how happy your children are, you see the click, you see the connection, and you have full this is it. This is going to work. You have full faith. And when you go through that chuppah and you know that the blessings have come down, when that glass breaks, you say mother tongue and you just celebrate. And it's just the most amazing feeling.
So there's no, there were no nerves. You weren't nervous. You weren't worried.
Before.
Yeah.
Same as the groom and the bride. They're also nervous before, right?
Slightly.
Yeah, so you've been nervous before, but very happy at the same time. Very, very happy.
Yeah. I know we've touched on this a little bit, but I want, maybe you can elaborate. What are the, I feel like, the system has for the most part worked over the generations with a few changes here and there. What do you think is not working currently with this system, with this ultra-Orthodox system? What are the problems that the system is facing? And what do you think are the solutions to those problems?
So I mean, the most part, I'm a very big believer in the system, but I do feel that there are a couple of problems that are emerging. Number one, today we live in a world, we can't hide from the fact that the world's influence, the secular world's influence, is very, very strong, right? So it's a little bit more difficult. People are growing up and in a different context than they did in the shtetl. So we need to take account for that. I feel that there are two problems at the moment, right? One is, I don't think enough is done, and maybe it used to be not as necessary, but today it's much more necessary. I don't think enough is done years before people get married to talk about healthy relationships and what that means. All relationships with your friends, relationship with siblings, with parents, whatever it is, right? And to lay the foundations for what a real relationship means. We live in a very me world, right? I mean, it's no secret that today in all systems, including the Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox world, divorce is rising, right? Relationship breakdown is rising. Now, part of that, a small percentage, and I don't believe it's the only reason. Some people like to say it's the only reason. I disagree with that. Part of that is that it's less taboo to get divorced today, and therefore maybe in previous times people just stuck it out. Today they don't want to stick it out, so they get divorced. Okay, that's maybe counts for a few, but I think it's much deeper than that. I think that people are less capable to have good relationships today, and the reason for that is because they're much more egocentric. It's a me world. People are very into what they feel, what they need. And that's a huge problem, which is why we're finding such disrespect. We're finding such discussions around disrespect, right? I think for example, just to go back to that movement, the movement of consent today is a wonderful movement, but it's not the answer to the problem. The problem has to be addressed in year one, in year two, in year three. It's got to be from when children are very, very small, the whole idea of being selfless, be able to give yourself, to put yourself aside, be an individual, be who you are, but at the same time, make room for others. That starts from very, very, very young. And I think that's something that has to be in a much stronger way, be brought into the whole discussion as children grow up, and about understanding that about relationships, it's about putting in work, it's about making room for others, about respecting other people, right? Because that leads to the second problem. I think because people are so worried today and they see relationship dysfunction, this very system we're discussing tonight is starting to be affected because people are starting to be too scared. And therefore, we're starting to find that people are saying, I need to know the person better. I need to get to another person better. I have to be sure. I have to be certain. No one's sure. No one's certain. You don't have to. You know what I'm saying? And people ask, I know in the research, I've had calls where people have called me because people that I might know to ask questions. And the kind of questions they ask are ridiculous questions, right? We need to know the fundamentals, but there has to be more of a jumping in attitude. More work has to be done on us, and then less work on the other person of exactly how they dress and how they this and how they look like. And and parents are worried, are they going to be a good fit for my son? Let them meet and let them work it out. They'll see, they'll work it out together already, right? So yeah, I think that's part of what's happening today. But I think mostly, again, much more work has to be done today on what relationships are really about, to make preparations so the system could work better.
Okay, does anyone have any questions? If anyone has any questions, please type it in the chat box or in the comment section on Facebook if you have any questions. Todd, do you have anything else you want to share on the topic?
I'm just thinking, I don't think so. I think we've covered most of it, I believe.
Okay.
Again, I think the concept is, I think what we discussed tonight, really a lot of it is relative to all relationships. And, I'll just throw in one thing, which is a problem. Guess what's problem in the system? It's a problem in all systems nowadays. there's a big problem where social media is having a big impact on this also. Besides the fact that social media is having an impact on relationships generally because people are married to themselves, and there are studies out that social media are they are causing things like empathy to decline and things like that, which is another discussion. But also, often what's happening is that people know everyone. I mean, you have 4,000 friends, right? So you know everyone already. And sometimes we're like, people make prejudgments and preconceived. No, this is in all systems, in all communities. People have told me this. People from all kinds of communities have told me this, that they're finding it hard for their children to meet people because as soon as the suggestion comes up, oh, we know them already. I'm friends with them on Facebook. I know all about them already. My friends know all about them already. I know who went out with them already. I know who met them already. I know why they didn't like them, right? So kind of I've written them up before we even start. And that's a really, really big problem today. I think people need to start to move away from that. Give people a clean slate. Don't judge them. Just see how it works. Go out and meet and give it a go.
Let me end off with one final question. We're obviously, probably, I assume that the majority of people listening are already married. And many of them, all their children are married, perhaps. Is there a relevance to this discussion to someone who's already married? In other words, is there any concept here that we can learn from the system that we can apply to those who are already married and are not dating?
Yes, I think so, absolutely. I think relationships have to keep on being nurtured. And one of the beauties of relationships is that they need to keep growing. And one of the ways they keep growing is you got to keep putting the spark into them. One of the things that I find whenever a couple comes to me which has problems is that I ask the first question, I ask, how much time do you spend together? Not talking about finance or children, right? Or the problems with our children, right? It's like that. But how much time do you spend together just smoothing, just going out? How often do you have a date night? How often do you just nurture your relationship? How pressured are you from the pressures of life that you're forgetting to notice what your spouse, what your partner needs, what they're feeling? How attentive are you? How listening are you? So I think this is the whole point, right? This is the concept. So therefore, it doesn't matter where you are in your relationship. Relationships always need to be fueled in a beautiful way, and not an imposition type, not in a heavy way, but in a beautiful way. But it needs the work. It needs to be reignited, re-sparked all the time. And I think that's the takeaway. We have to keep on reflecting on ourselves. How attentive are we? How well are we listening? How respectful are we? And how much are we doing for the other? And just generally together, people need to sort of keep on talking and keep on. Often relationships, even ones that started very beautifully, whatever system they got together with, often relationships become stale. And when they become stale, they're on the way to ruin a lot of times. So I think that's a takeaway for everyone.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining. Please, God, we'll have more schmoozes. If anyone has any questions, you can post it. You can private message me, whatever you want. Other than that, have a great night. And thank you so much for joining.